Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello and a very warm welcome. This is the Motormouth podcast with myself, Harry Benjamin, and Tim Sylvie, where in each show we sit down with a figure from the world of motorsport and dive into how exactly they ended up where they are now. F1 champions, team principals, Formula E and touring car stars. If there's anyone with a story to tell, they'll usually tell it right here. Motormouth is an app and website where you can catch up with all the latest F1 gossip at motormouth.club and view live timings across a race weekend with our app. We're also proud to be partnered with the Brain Tumor Charity, helping to raise awareness and help find a cure through events like our annual karting race, where you can go head-to-head against professional drivers, all to raise vital funds. For more info, check out motormouthkartrace.com. This podcast is brought to you by F1 Experiences, the official experience, hospitality and travel program of Formula One. F1 Experiences is the closest you can get to the pinnacle of motorsport, and let's face it, any chance to get close to Formula One, we're all over it. Enjoy the very best race tickets and track hospitality, first-class hotels and unprecedented access you simply cannot get anywhere else. For more information on how you can book your F1 experience, visit f1experiences.com, where you can also save 5% on your very own F1 Experiences package by using the code MM11F1E when checking out online. So, what are you waiting for? Experience the 2022 F1 season firsthand with exclusive access courtesy of F1 Experiences. Get booking today at f1experiences.com.
Hi, I'm Tim Sylvie, and today is a special day, listeners. We've had F1 team principals, former F1 world champions, F1 pioneers, and retired legends. But we've never had a current Formula One driver until today. But before we come to him, I have to introduce my lofty bearded colleague, Harry Benjamin. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Gearing up for Imola this weekend, doing the F3 coverage. So looking forward to that. Prepping hard.
Good. Attaboy. Doing your revision. That's what I like to hear.
Absolutely.
We are pushed for time today. So I'm going to introduce our special guest very shortly. But before I do, our guest today hails from Toronto in Canada. And Harry, I know how you like your geography. So can you tell me, what does Toronto have more of than any other city in North America? Is it A, golf courses, B, bars, C, cinemas, or D, hedgehogs?
Hedgehogs.
Absolutely wrong. It's golf courses. Okay. They have 13 golf courses in the city itself and 87 golf courses within 20 miles. One more for you before we bring him in. What ethnicity in Toronto is the largest outside of its home country? Is it Greek, Filipino, German, or Italian?
Oh. I want to say German.
You're wrong. It's Italian.
Oh, okay.
Toronto has the largest population of Italians anywhere in the world outside of Italy itself.
So this has been a terrible start to the show, really.
Appalling. Yep. Anyway, shall I introduce today's guest?
I think we better get on with it, yeah.
So today, it's our pleasure to be joined by Williams F1 driver Nicholas Latifi. He's a man who graduated through karts, Formula 3, Formula Renault 3.5 and F2 on his way to the top of the sport. It's a real joy to have him here. Nicky Latifi, a massive welcome to the Motormouth podcast.
Thank you for having me. And I do have to say, I had to kind of stop myself from jumping in and giving my own answer to those questions. And I could happily say that I would have got them both right.
So, yes.
Oh, no. Well, that's better that you did. But, well, crucial question for you now, though. Is it Nicky, Nick, Nicholas? What are we like?
We could go for Nicky. That's Nicky. Kind of what I'm called more often than not in the paddock, kind of, yeah.
All right, then.
Being the team.
Well, I mean, it's an absolute pleasure to have you join us. Thank you for taking the time. We start all of our shows with pretty much the same question. And we like to go back to sort of the start of sort of, well, your life, your career. And when the sort of racing bug bit you, what was it that made you go, I want to be a racing driver?
I guess firstly, I kind of have to just say how I got into the sport. And it was definitely no racing bug that Bimby. It was really just a fluke, to be honest, how I got involved. I started very, very late. Started the first time I drove any kind of go-kart, just in a kind of arrive and drive kind of environment, was when I was 12 years old. And this just, again, completely by fluke, happened to go to a go-kart track with my some of my family members, cousins, older brother and dad. And we just kind of made a fun weekend out of it. Thought I was pretty good, enjoyed it quite a lot, was the youngest one there. I was going around quicker than a lot of the older people. And basically I ended up finding a go-kart track about 40 minutes from where I lived in Toronto, an indoor place just to kind of frequent on the weekends as a hobby with my older brother and my dad. And I guess the cheesy way to say it, but it is the truth of how it happened. The owner of that track at the time was ex-racing car driver and was coaching drivers at the time, and he kind of saw some talent in me for never having really any experience, never having driven go-karts before. And he's the one who convinced me and my parents to let's say make me try racing. And the funny thing is, which people always laugh when I say this, but on a number of occasions I said no. at the time I didn't really have any interest in wanting to race. It was something that I really liked. I wouldn't go as far to say as loved at that point in time. It was just, you know, a hobby I really enjoyed doing on the weekend, some kind of family bonding. There was obviously elements that I loved about it, you know, the kind of speed, and this was indoor karting I was doing, so kind of, you know, driving between the tire bearers and whatnot. And after kind of a few attempts at trying to convince me, it was kind of you know, if I don't like it, I don't have to continue it. Yeah. And so I obviously got to, you know, try my first proper race, four-stroke go-kart at the time. So quite slow compared to what I ended up racing. And I got hooked. I mean, I loved it. And the rest is history.
and you eventually worked your way up through Italian Formula 3. You did the Macau Grand Prix, which is an absolutely spectacular race. And fast forward to 2019, runner-up in F2 behind Nyck de Vries, a year in which you led much of the season. You notched up several wins. That must have been a pleasing sort of breakthrough year for you, but also a little bit frustrating in equal measure that you weren't able to quite tip it off with a championship victory.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think going into that year, I always knew it was kind of going to be my, let's say, my last shot. I ended up really having, you know, the kind of year of worthy of, you know, graduating up to Formula One, let's say. So, yeah, it started off very, very strong. I think three wins in the first three rounds. Leading the championship. And then, yeah, it kind of started to get away from me. A few races of kind of mistakes from my side, bad luck as well. And in the end, it was a nice fought championship. Obviously, Nick was a very deserving winner, but still very pleased with the season I produced. And ultimately, it got me here to where I am today.
Well, and you are obviously in Formula One. So that must be pretty damn cool. What was it like to drive an F1 car for the first time? Do you remember the feelings that you felt stepping up into an F1 car? And actually, when was the first time you drove an F1 car?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely do remember that feeling. So it was, yeah, obviously prior to me being a racing driver in Formula One, as I got the opportunity when I was still in Formula 2, which at the time was called GP2, and that was with Renault. So, well, now Alpine at the time. There's been a lot of changes in team names and stuff throughout the years. But this was a V8 car, so much louder, much higher pitch compared to the current V6 turbos, kind of hybrid era cars that we use now. And I just remember when the car fired up for the first time in that loud, kind of deafening roar, let's say. And obviously pulling out of the pit lane, feeling that speed, the kind of first time putting your foot flat to the floor, the kind of, you know, vibration and a little bit of the sense of butterflies you get as well the first time going full throttle down the straight, but then very quickly goes away because obviously I was always used to the speed, but that first time always when you step up to a new category and you feel that extra power, it's always a bit like, it's a refreshing feeling, but then one that quickly feels very normal after a lap or two.
does that normalization of Formula One happen as well when you go onto the grid for the first time and you're surrounded by legends of the sport and you're sitting there thinking, holy crap, I've made it. I'm here. I'm on the grid. I'm surrounded by Fernando Alonso and Sebastian Vettel. But what were the feelings like then? Did you have time to sort of take it all in, or is it all a bit of a blur?
Yeah, so, I mean, I was fortunate enough to experience driving on a Grand Prix race weekend a number of times before actually being a full-time race driver. So throughout my kind of test and reserve driver duties across the years before 2020, my debut season, I got to drive in some FP1 sessions in which I was, you know, able to drive on a real Grand Prix weekend and share the track with a lot of these guys. And, you know, for sure, the first one, the second one, I even got the opportunity to drive twice in my home Grand Prix FP1 session. It did feel very, very different, very cool to be, firstly driving on an official weekend, but as well sharing the track with, you know, all other 19 drivers at the time. But then there was definitely, I would say, a different, more unique feeling once I had signed at the end of the 2019 year to be the full-time race driver, and kind of the whole build-up into the of the winter season, the preseason of 2020, kind of arriving on track to the preseason testing, kind of starting to sink in a little bit more. And then when I got to Australia, that was supposed to be the first race that year. Doing the Thursday, I remember I was in the press conference with Lewis Hamilton, Sebastian Vettel, and Daniel Ricciardo. Obviously, he was the homeboy there. That was kind of, again, quite special.
Yeah.
And then COVID happened.
Yeah.
and we all got sent home the next day.
Yeah, so. Ruined it for everyone.
ruined it for everybody. And then my kind of debut was put on hold for three and a half months or something like that. So for sure, by the time things ended up getting going again, I think it was beginning of July, and we started off in Austria. It definitely felt different. It didn't feel like, let's say, how I was expecting my debut in Formula One to be, just from the, you know, obviously everything, the driving wise and on track was all the same, but, you know, all the other kind of hype, you know, the fans, the kind of grand spectacle that is F1, the media, that was all obviously very, very toned down. But to a certain extent, I think that also kind of made it a bit, in a way, nicer for me to kind of, let's say, experience Formula My yeah. first races and kind of maybe first year of Formula One that way, because, you know, I guess speaking bluntly, you know, all of the extra stuff besides the driving and the working with the engineers, it's kind of all just extra stuff. I mean, I won't go as far to say as a distraction, but that's not the priority of the job. It's kind of just all noise, and a lot of it is part of the job. But as a racing driver, I'm there to drive the car fast, work with the team, try and understand how I could drive better, learn, get the car better working with the team. And then there's just a lot of other aspects that is a part of the job. So I was kind of shielded from that, let's say, the first year.
Yeah.
And especially towards the end of last year when fans were starting to come back in full capacity, this year, you know, no more restrictions for the most part. It's been very refreshing to get to experience that, albeit very late, let's say. Not later, not really into my Formula One career, but just later than it would have been, and kind of really experiencing what a real Formula One race weekend is like when the full atmosphere is there.
So you're saying you didn't become a Formula One driver so you could appear on podcast for 30 minutes. I'm quite shocked by that, really. So
this is a highlight. Yeah,
you might be heartbroken to hear and know that.
Oh, devastating.
What a shame.
Devastating.
But It's interesting about you saying, you know, it was a bit of a different start, certainly, to most rookies' F1 careers. But fast forward to this year, and obviously the regulations have changed dramatically since you first arrived in Formula One. We've seen, you know, lots of aero bits removed. We've got ground effect coming in. How has that been so far for you adapting to the car? And do you like this new era of Formula One that's been imposed?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a huge fan and supporter of it. I think it's, for me on the personal side, it's been quite refreshing and a very, let's say, unique challenge to kind of get on top of it. I mean, I would say, you know, what I've been saying kind of coming into this year and into preseason is it kind of feels more like a first real year of how I always kind of expected Formula One to be in terms of, I guess just to give a bit of background, you know, when you come from junior categories, you know, everyone's given the same car, you know, there's no new bits to play with. You just play around with the kind of setup options you have. Obviously coming into Formula One my first year in 2020, you know, for sure it was a big step driving a brand new car for me at the time. But those cars were very similar evolutions off the previous year's cars. And that was the same going into 2021. I mean, there was almost no changes besides these minor changes to the floor. Everyone had to kind of reduce the size of the diffuser. But because of the regulations, there wasn't really a lot of scope to really develop the car and kind of, you know, bring a lot of new parts, you kind of really game-changing parts. You know, we refer to them as upgrades and developments. But this year, coming into this year, you know, a completely fresh, clean slate, you know, a whole... you know, just such a big opportunity for every team to kind of, depending on where you start, what you see, to kind of learn from other teams, see the different directions and setup and aerodynamic philosophies that the teams have adapted, and kind of really try and help guide the team and push for, you know, what's the direction we need to go in. Obviously, as well, being able to kind of look forward to new upgrades and new parts, which we don't have at the moment coming, but we will have, just as many other teams will have as well. And that kind of part I felt I missed in the first 2 years of F1, and coming into this year, which is again really helped by these new rules and kind of fresh slate, it's been really exciting and refreshing to me. And I think, you know, just firstly the changes that and the guidelines that F1 made with these new cars, I mean, I think it's clear with three races in, they're they've achieved what they've set out to do, which is kind of shake up their running order a little bit, firstly, not just at the top, but even in the midfield, improve the racing, cars can follow closer, and just create a better show. And, you know, me, firstly, as a fan of the sport as well, you know, when I've been able to watch the races back on Monday, once I get back to my flat in London. I've enjoyed the races quite a lot.
A quick interruption to the show to remind you to check out our sponsor, F1 Experiences. F1 Experiences offer a wide range of packages that come direct from Formula One, giving you a unique experience of the pinnacle of motorsports. Official ticket packages come with the very best race tickets, first-class hotels and transfers, and unprecedented access, including track tours, pit lane walks, VIP hospitality, and loads more. It really is the closest you can get to Formula One. And Motormouth listeners can save 5% on your next F1 Experiences package by using the code MM11F1E when booking online at F1Experiences.com.
It's good. I mean, it's the regulations have definitely, like you say, created that closer racing. I mean, we saw some incredible lines of cars following closely behind each other in Australia. It's amazing to see. So it's obviously working.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
One thing that we've also seen this time, this year for the first time, is this porpoising effect where the drivers are literally hopping their way down the straights. What's that like? That must be seriously irritating, if nothing else.
Yeah, I think irritating is could be a good word to describe it. I mean, yeah, it's obviously a new experience for a lot of us drivers. I was going to say new phenomenon, but it's not new because it has existed before with, you know, obviously older generation cars that's, you know, relied more on ground effects. So yeah, it was very weird experiencing for the first time in Barcelona preseason testing. At first, you're a bit uneasy because, you know, you're cruising down the straight over 300 kilometers an hour. And the car is just bouncing up and down like crazy, you know, smashing the bottom of the floor to the asphalt. You're thinking, going at the speed, like, one, is the car going to break? Is it just suddenly going to like lose all the downforce and veer off one way? And obviously just with, you know, driving it and tons of repetition, you kind of start to realize, okay, the car is still sticking. It's just it's more of an annoyance, let's say. I mean, there's obviously a reliability and car damage element if it's very extreme. I mean, I think it's been a very unique challenge for a lot of teams to try and understand. I mean, there's teams clearly that are happy to run with a lot of porpoising. I think Ferrari is probably the most visible one. Yeah. There's teams clearly that have been more outspoken that, you know, they really can't afford to have it. And whether that's for drivability, for reliability. I mean, I guess Mercedes is the one team that's been very outspoken about it and how it's limiting their cars. But yeah, every team is kind of having to combat it in their own way, maybe compromising a bit the pure potential of the car. But that's part of, that's part of the game we have across all the teams, some of the smartest minds in kind of aerodynamics and Formula One. And that's part of the challenge.
Did they know that going into that testing, was it a shock when it happened? Or were people like, yeah, that we kind of expected that to happen with the ground effect?
So I obviously can't speak for a lot of the other teams and drivers. It was kind of a surprise for me to, let's say, feel it for the first time, but I had kind of been warned about it, from, my driver coach who I'd been working for with a long time, because, he drove in an era that ground effects was there, and, had kind of been saying how, you know, how crazy it was. Yeah, how crazy it was to drive, and how it could be difficult to. I mean, he was driving kind of the equivalent of, let's say, LMP1 at the time back then. So he was like saying how difficult it would be to see out of the windshield, kind of going down, your kind of teeth vibrating, chattering the whole way down the straights. So kind of when I did feel it for the first time, I was not like, what is this? This is strange. Like, I knew exactly what it was. Yeah. It was just very, very strange to actually feel it driving at 300 kilometers, over 300 kilometers an hour.
Well, good thing he warned you, but so at least you had preparation of what was to come. Off track, though, I do want to touch on some of the things, because you've been quite vocal, especially after the events of Abu Dhabi, and I don't want to go back and rehash all of that. But just looking back at where you are now with it, obviously there was a lot of social media backlash, particularly aimed at you, and you felt the need to come out with a statement as well. You received some horrible messages, and social media can be a really horrible place. And even just talking to you for 20 minutes now, you know, you clearly are a very nice, personable man. So, you know, people messaged behind these bizarre profiles that you don't know who they are. How do you reflect on that whole situation at the moment? What do you think? Why do you think it occurs, you know, so much now, particularly aimed at F1?
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously with the, let's say, modern day and age of social media and the access it gives to people. I mean, I've always been a fan of social media. I mean, I use it quite a lot, and there's, you know, clearly a whole list of positives and cool things that it allows for people. I mean, it's a way for people to stay connected. It gives, I guess, fans and supporters incredible amounts of access to, you know, not only individuals but different sports, different organizations that they otherwise wouldn't normally have. So there's a lot of positives to go along with it. At the same time, this clearly a huge negative aspect to it. And yeah, kind of like what you were saying, in the sense that, you know, people can hide behind profiles and, you know, write and send out, you know, negative comments, negative thoughts, you know, inappropriate things that you wouldn't otherwise say or mention to someone if you were seeing them face to face, and that you probably wouldn't write or say if your kind of name was exposed, let's say. So there's a whole negative aspect to it. I mean, I still believe there's far more positives to it, but it's just about, you know, kind of knowing how to deal with the negative side of it. And specifically in my situation, yeah, after Abu Dhabi, it was obviously a very, you know, high profile incident. And I mean, as soon as it all happened, I kind of, you know, once the race unfolded, sorry, the result of the race unfolded, I kind of knew exactly what I was going to be in for. And that's just, you know, highlights the harsh reality that, you know, I was aware of, and I'm sure most people were aware of. So, yeah, I mean, I felt it was really important for me to use my platform and my following to kind of spread that message. I did with my statements. You know, there was definitely a point when I was, as I mentioned in my statement, kind of going back and forth, you know, how do I want to address this? Do I just want to kind of let it pass and in a few weeks kind of just return like nothing happened? Or, you know, actually kind of try and use the incident to kind of spread a positive message. And I felt it was really important to do that. Very happy that I did so. You know, I've now partnered with an organization called Cyber Smile, which kind of aims to spread awareness and kind of tackle this issue of kind of cyberbullying, online hate and abuse. And yeah, looking forward to working with them this year to kind of, again, try and educate people and, yeah, just spread some positive messages.
Yeah, fair play. I mean, I think from, you know, an outsider looking in, someone who's a fan, you know, Harry and I have talked about it. I think you dealt with it incredibly well. And I don't know whether you do your own PR or you have someone to help you, but whoever it was, hit the nail on the head. I think you dealt with it supremely well and have come out of it all the better. Now, with Williams specifically, it feels like, albeit it's not been totally smooth sailing this season, but it feels like, compared to a couple of years ago, things are changing. We're turning a corner and heading in the right direction. New owners, new management, there's some performance there. Dare we dream that Williams is just starting to make its way back up the grid?
I think, you know, speaking about this year, as you said, we're clearly not starting off where we want it to be, but irrespective of where we are right now, I could definitely, you know, say I think all the right foundations are being put in place to have that resurgence and to get Williams back to, you know, where we want to be. I mean, obviously, I think every team wants to be in a position to firstly fight for points, then fight for podiums, ultimately fight for wins and championships, which, you know, obviously Williams knows all about. He's, you know, second most successful team all time in Formula One history. And yeah, we have new owners in charge now for about a year and a half, new management, new structure coming into a place. A lot of new people have joined the team over the past little while. But I guess, you know, being, to say, pragmatic and realistic, unfortunately in Formula One, everything takes a lot of time. It's very difficult to have a very abrupt change in form, both ways, really, going forward and going backwards. But I think it's always going to be harder to have that upturn and that, you know, large increase in performance. So there's a lot of positive things going on behind the scenes. It is a very long process. It is a very slow process. But that's just the nature of Formula One. So yeah, the team has a, you know, short term, long term vision. Obviously, we want to get back to more competitive ways. It's clear that we're not starting off how we hope this year, but I have all confidence in the team that's with time we will get there.
Yeah, that's great. I was just going to ask, just you know, going a bit more highbrow as we tend to do. Do you have any hidden talents? What are you good at that nobody knows about?
What am I good at that nobody knows? Let's say hidden talents. I mean, I was always big into video games. I mean, I don't play so much so much now, but and surprisingly not racing video games.
I was going to say, yeah.
I actually consider myself very bad at racing video games, but yeah, I was quite the Call of Duty player I was in my teens to late teens. I haven't played in a while, unfortunately. Did a lot during lockdown, the COVID lockdown. Some streaming on Twitch, like a lot of drivers got into. I'm just trying to think, other hidden talents.
How's your cooking? Any instruments?
I can make some very good Nutella crepes.
Oh, yes, of course.
That's my specialty. Just breakfast foods in general, I'm quite handy with. Anything else? Not so much.
Yeah, fair enough. Now, before we're nearly out of time with you, Nikki, but before we come on to our final three questions, if you were a team boss, who would be your ideal driver pairing? And you couldn't obviously pick yourself.
So if I was a team boss, ideal driver pairing. Does it have to be? Could it be of any driver?
Any era.
I think any era, whatever you want.
Okay. Any era. Okay. So, I mean, I think, although it's obviously way before my era, I mean, you'd have to choose a guy like Ayrton Senna. You'd be curious to see as a team boss, from the inside, why he was regarded as one of the best ever. So it would definitely be cool to experience that. And then to pair him alongside, I mean, I'd probably want to go with, one of the younger generation guys, newer guys, but someone like, you know, George, Max, or Charles. Just to kind of have that comparison and kind of two completely different eras and generations.
Yeah, I think solid choices all around. And by the way, while we're on that subject of being a team boss, what long-term aspirations? Will we see you in a management role or in a team boss capacity, 15, 20 years from now?
That's very difficult to say 15, 20 years from now. I mean, I don't even know what I'm going to be doing a week from now.
True, me neither. No clue.
I mean, at the moment, I would say no, but that's just because my sole kind of focus and kind of narrow vision is on being a racing driver in Formula One.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens in 15, 20 years.
We'll come back and ask you. We have a final three questions, which we asked to all of our guests. They're brought to us by our friends at F1 Experiences and Grid Rival. I'll kick off this week. Nikki, what's got you excited at this very moment?
What's got me excited at this very moment? I mean, it's the first sprint race weekend that we're going to have this year, which, I was a big fan of them last year. There was definitely some things that I felt could have been improved with the format. I think there's been some cool changes to, giving more points in the sprint race. But yeah, I'm just looking forward to getting the first sprint race out of the way. I mean, it's getting on with it quickly. One practice to kind of set everything for the qualifying races. The track I like. We're probably going to get some wet weather as well, so it's pretty exciting.
Yeah,
they really throw you into it, don't they, on a sprint race weekend with that sort of rejigged format. Second question for you. How much of your success is down to luck and right place, right time? And then how much is down to hard work and then other elements?
It's definitely a combination of both, and I would say that would be the same for everybody in the sport, because I mean, as we've seen many times, just the kind of hard work and getting the performance is often not enough, especially if there's just no seats available in Formula One. So obviously I had the year I did and got some good performances, and that happened to just coincide with the right time where the team that I was the reserve driver with had an opening, and I happened to be the reserve driver for that team, right? So if I was had a link with another team, then that opportunity probably wouldn't have come up. So it's definitely a bit of both, yeah.
And our very final question for you, and take this as deep or as shallow as you like, what are you scared of?
What am I scared of? Oh, okay, I see why you say deep or shallow. On the shallow front, spiders and snakes.
Yep.
Nice.
Which thankfully I managed to escape Australia without encounters with
no tarantulas then in the hotel room.
No, I was staying on a pretty high up floor, thankfully. So. And on a deeper level, what am I scared of? losing. Yeah. I don't like to lose.
No, well, like, you know, we've had a lot of other drivers. You know, failure is certainly up there as well.
That's what I was kind of thinking around with failure, but in a kind of like positive way. I mean, obviously, it's important to fail, or like when I say, you know, maybe failure is a very extreme word. It's important to make mistakes and learn from them. And you know, if you want to go to the extreme sense, you could say if you make a mistake or do something wrong, it is a minor failure. It's important to kind of experience and to learn from them. But yeah, obviously not wanting to fail can be a huge motivator. So yeah, I feel a failure can be pretty important too.
Well, I mean, you're not alone in that one. But look, we've come to the end of our time with you, Nicky. It's been absolutely brilliant to get to know you a little bit more and chat about your career to start with, where you are now, where you're going. It's a challenging start, but we'll back you all the way as well. So best of luck for this weekend in Imola and for the rest of the season. Nicholas Latifi, thank you so much for coming onto the Motormouth podcast.
Thank you for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
If you've been listening to this and thinking, actually, I really want to go and experience a race for myself in person, why not do it in style at a Formula One Grand Prix thanks to F1 Experiences, the official experience, hospitality and travel program of Formula One. F1 Experiences really is the closest you can get to the sport. Official ticket packages which include the best race tickets, first class hotels, travel and exclusive behind the scenes access across a Grand Prix weekend, F1 Experiences offer packages like no other. So to book your F1 Experiences package, head online to f1experiences.com, and if you enter code MM11F1E, you'll get 5% off too. Thank you so much for listening to the Motormouth podcast. Do make sure you give us a follow on our socials, Twitter at Motormouth_, Instagram at Motormouth_official, and Facebook, just search Motormouth. You can also download the Motormouth app, where you can get exclusive video content from MMTV, create your own social profile to interact with other fans, and check up on all the latest happenings with whatever motorsport takes your fancy. We're also proud to be supporting the Brain Tumor Charity too, so make sure you check the links in the podcast description to find out how you can help cure brain tumors quicker. Don't forget to like, subscribe and review, and until next time, you've been listening to the Motormouth podcast.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Welcome to Sincerely Sloan, presented by Uninterrupted. I'm your host, professional tennis player, wife, parent, and entrepreneur, Sloan Stevens. As an athlete and as a person, my journey has had a lot of twists and turns, from moments of adversity and doubt to unimaginable triumph and satisfaction. Throughout the season, I'm joined by some of the biggest names in sports, entertainment, culture, and a few members of my tribe. Our conversations keep it real and push it past skin deep. We reveal the perspectives, routines, and products that allow each of us to show up at our best. Join me on my journey of self-discovery and many, many laughs along the way. Sincerely, Sloan.